Welcome to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg. Over the next hour, you'll be introduced to business and local leaders impacting our community. Text your comments or questions directly to the studio at 540-371-5756 or comment on Facebook at WFVA 1230. Now, the host of Town Talk, Ted Shoup.
Dr. Donald Stern with us again this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, good morning. It's glad to have you with us. And again, thank you for coming on regularly with us to talk with us in these days.
Sure, Ted. Good morning. Hope you're doing well today, and happy Friday to you.
Happy Friday to you. This is the beginning of phase one as someone, as an area health director. What are your thoughts as the state, most of the state, but besides Northern Virginia, Accomack, and Richmond, begins to open up just a bit?
Sure. I think it's a reasonable approach for us to be cautious as we open back up. We slowly kind of close things down, and then now it's time to, as we can see that our hospitals are not overwhelmed, we can begin opening up. There are three phases that the governor is proposing over the next, 2 to 4 months, depending on how COVID-19 impacts our community. So he's going to be watching the data as we open up our economy.
As we watch things, the numbers in the past week have gone up, and even the hospitalizations in this area have been a little bit high this week.
Well, actually, Ted, for the last couple of weeks, we've seen an uptake in the number of hospitalizations, as well as the number of cases. And, as we've been watching the data, the number of cases come in. And remember, from a functional point of view, every positive COVID-19 laboratory report is sent to the health department. My staff at every local level in the Commonwealth of Virginia, those health department staff then investigate any positive case, do an interview, and determine who their contacts are, guide the positive individual in how to properly isolate, whether that's at home or, of course, sometimes in the hospital, but most commonly at home, and then interview their contacts. That is, their contacts who are considered to be at risk for transmission of disease. We don't want to know. I mean, we don't contact everybody that the index case or that the individual with the positive lab passes in the hallway, or that individual who comes by their office door and says good morning. We interview those folks who are perceived to be at risk for transmission of disease, and that's those that have been in close contact within less than 6 feet for 10 to 15 minutes or longer during the day. And so we interview them and we isolate those folks. Those numbers, so the number of cases is up. We were wondering whether that's due to the expansion of testing or actual expansion of the disease. The way to tell whether it's expansion of disease, I think the most sensitive number, again, is the incidence of hospitalization. And for the last 2 weeks, there's been an uptake in that. So it was down to about averaging around 20 people in the hospital, or 0 to 1 new case of hospitalization a day. Now it's back up to 1 to 2 cases a day. And we've got about 30 people in the hospital right now, averaging about 30 people in the hospital.
Yeah, that number we've been watching that for the last few weeks, and it has stayed up there. It stayed up there, and around that upper 20s, low 30s kind of numbers. The numbers in Northern Virginia are so high, and you start to wonder, we're not Northern Virginia around here, but a lot of people in this area do commute up there, and you also wonder if with some businesses starting to reopen, if people are going to be going up there and perhaps bringing it back to this community.
Well, sure, Ted. And what is it about Northern Virginia? It's It's the density of population, the volume of folks, which presents this organism an opportunity to transmit from person to person. You'll see this as universal across the country, that in more rural, less dense populations, you don't see as much disease. That's because the disease doesn't have that degree of opportunity to move from person to person. In denser populations, that's just the natural history or epidemiology of this type of disease.
I can't remember if I've heard you said. I know I've heard people say that this is in the community and it's going to be here for a while. And now we need to learn, really continue to do what we've been taught to do over the last few months, and just make sure that we continue to do that.
I agree, Ted. So you said that it's going to be here for a while. So we need to learn that this pandemic is going to change to what's called an endemic disease. From pandemic, which is this worldwide sudden spread of disease, to endemic, which means it's here, it's in the background, it's going to be with us. The term endemic is Latin in origin, which means native to the people. So we're going to need to learn how to live with COVID-19, and we will. I mean, we do that with flu and multiple other infectious diseases all the time. It's in the background in our communities, and most of the time we don't think about it until, you know, grandmother starts coughing because of her flu, and we become more concerned. We try to provide support and care for her and others. We try to avoid spreading. You know, we learned a long time ago about flu, how to cover our cough properly and wash our hands frequently. And well, we're going to learn that about COVID-19. It's going to be endemic. It's going to be here, and we will learn how to live with it. There will probably be a vaccine within the next year to 18 months. So as we develop natural immunity to the disease, many people will then acquire natural immunity. We will then be able to expand that immunity through the use of a vaccine. And within a couple of years, we'll have fairly broad immunity to this, and it will, I think it's at about that point, we'll feel things are kind of back to normal.
Wow, a couple of years. But that's, I guess, that's what is in this case is kind of what to be expected when you're dealing with a novel virus like this.
That's correct. But again, Ted, you know that, as we've discussed, most people deal with this virus fairly well. So it's those individuals that suffer the more severe consequences from this disease, that is the elderly and those with underlying medical conditions, are the ones that need to be particularly careful. And others in the community need to be careful for them. Protect our elderly and those with underlying medical conditions. Those are the folks that should not be going out right now as the governor opens up phase one.
Yeah.
Let people go back to work. Elderly ought to stay home. We ought to stay, be more cautious about being around the elderly and use those social distancing practices for them and those with underlying medical conditions.
We've learned a new word, though, this morning. I had never heard of endemic. So I'm going to try to, from pandemic to endemic. I like that. I've learned something new already this morning.
Yes, sir.
Dr. Donald Stern with us, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. More coming up. We're going to continue on this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. We will be right back.
Opinions, we've all got them, and we'd like to hear yours on Town Talk, brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Chubel.
Rappahannock Area Health District Acting Director Dr. Donald Stern with us this morning on the program. Dr. Stern, we'll talk a little bit about what Phase 1 involves. That's what goes into effect today for most of the state. What can we expect to see with Phase 1?
Well, to put it in perspective, Ted, the governor has an outlined plan for opening up, again, the economy in Virginia in a phased approach, Phase 1 lasting 2 to 4 weeks, then Phase 2 lasting a similar time period, and then Phase 3 would be the kind of the complete opening up and removing all the restrictions that have been put into place to prevent the spread of this disease and preserve life in Virginia. But Phase 1 of that, then, there's lots of details here, but kind of in summary, what it means is for non-essential retail that right now have been open with a 10-person limit. They can open up to 50% capacity for restaurants that have been limited to takeout and delivery can now do takeout delivery and outdoor seating up to 50% of that capacity. You know that entertainment and public amusement, theaters, so on and so forth, have been closed, and they're going to remain closed in Phase 1. Fitness and exercise facilities have been closed. They're going to remain closed in Phase 1, except if there's some outdoor fitness classes. As you know, the beaches have been limited to exercise and fishing only. And that will continue. Gatherings, they're a 10-person limit to various gatherings, and that continues. For teleworking, that's been strongly encouraged, and we continue to encourage teleworking. Of course, masking, we're asking folks to continue to wear your mask when you're out in public, especially around groups of people. You don't need to wear it if you're just walking down the street by yourself. Mm-hmm. But if you find yourself in a store around people, it's reasonable to wear a mask, not to protect yourself necessarily, but to protect other people because you may have COVID-19. Again, 80% of this disease is asymptomatic, mild to moderate disease. You may have the virus and not know it. So the way to prevent the spread of disease and help protect others is for you to put on a mask. There's other elements in here regarding child care, places of worship, that they've allowed for drive-in services and limiting to a 10-person place of worship. Now it's drive-in or a 50% capacity. So that's capacity of the building, not 50% of your membership. So 50% of your capacity. So if you have a church where you could easily get all your members in the facility and still meet the 50% capacity fire code limits, you're good to go.
Okay.
Yeah.
I know a lot. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, well, that's pretty much, there's the state parks. Have been some day use only. Now they're phasing in some overnight use, and schools remain closed. I will tell you, began a conversation with the superintendents yesterday, inviting them to nominate one of their staff to a small work group to begin a discussion about reopening our schools. We expect that might be, we may be able to do that in August. And so we're talking about what are the issues going to be, what are issues we need to address, and how can we plan for reopening up of schools. I'm quite convinced, Ted, that our schools can do handle this very well. We've been versed so much in COVID-19. They know how to clean their schools, clean contact services. If a child with COVID-19 shows up in a classroom, a child with a positive result, a sick child, let's say, that they send for testing and is found to be COVID-19, they can handle that from a communicable disease point of view. But part of the concern here is you can imagine when a child who has head lice shows up in school can create such a commotion. Parents are going to get very upset,
yeah,
knowing that there's a COVID-19 child in the school. Well, guess what? If we open our schools, that's going to happen. If we open our schools, someone's going to show up who's going to ultimately be a COVID-19 positive, maybe asymptomatic, and then goes home over a weekend, gets sick, lab test turns positive. We're going to have to learn how to deal with that. Are we going to keep our schools closed, or are we going to trust our schools in their preparation for and handling this well? So my outreach to the superintendents yesterday was, let's start this conversation now so that we can then have a conversation with parents before school ever opens, so that our parent community will understand how our schools plan to handle this, to give parents reassurance that we can manage this as a school division and we can protect our children in our school. We're not going to be able to eliminate the risk of a COVID-19 child being in the school, but we can minimize the risk of spread of disease in our schools. That can be done. So our work is to try to look at not only the communicable disease issue around COVID-19 as we begin to open schools, but how can we reassure parents and control for the anticipated hysteria, you know?
Yeah. Well,
just keep the schools closed. What do you, you know, you can't have it both ways.
Right. And I was just going to, it's interesting that you brought that up, because I know in the community, it's starting to be talked about. And I guess when you think about it, the schools may be one of the first points of where, you know, when we talk about learning to live with COVID-19, and this may be one of our first situations where we learn how to live with this.
Sure. Ted, you know, we live with influenza A, we live with influenza B and the variants of those viruses. And we don't give hardly a second thought to it. But they're here, and those diseases make our family and friends ill. And people at work, we know that there are people at work every year who end up having the flu and being out of work for 3 to 7 days. And some end up in the hospital, and unfortunately, some succumb to that disease in a similar manner as COVID-19, particularly the elderly and those with underlying conditions. But COVID-19 is a different virus. This is causes this more severe inflammatory process in the lungs. And so it's reasonable for us to be very careful right now, not just because it's somewhat of a different virus that causes this remarkable inflammatory process in the lungs of some individuals, but because we're all still susceptible. If we haven't had this disease yet, we're susceptible. We could still get this disease.
And I guess the other thing to factor in with schools and kids are some teachers who might be elderly. And I guess you have to figure that into the whole equation.
Well, sure. Very good point, Ted. So this conversation will not only have to do with what issues need to be addressed with students, but also with teachers. Should we have teachers in the school who are over 60 and with underlying condition? Is that reasonable for us right now? I don't have an answer to that question. Part of this will be what risk are people willing to take and what level are people going to be comfortable with in our community? So part of this is to start having this conversation with the schools and with our community so that people become more, the more we learn about this and how to handle it, the more comfortable we are with dealing with it rather than responding with our fear and our anxiety.
Well, and that's what a great point. That this, besides just the school, that this is going to have to, I guess, at some point, become a conversation with the community of how we live and how we start things up and transition back into being able to do certain things.
Right, Ted. We're not going to be able to box this virus in any short period of time. It's going to take a long time, even if that is possible. So we're going to have to learn how to live with this in an endemic state, probably for the rest of history.
Yeah, it's you're right. Yep, it's here. Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, our special guest this morning. More coming up. We will continue on this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. It is now 8:30.
I had the radio on. I'm listening to
Talk Done Right. News Talk 1230 WFVA Fredericksburg, a Centennial Broadcasting Station. You're listening to Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. Got a question for today's guest? Text the studio now at 540-371-5756. Here's the host of Town Talk, Ted Schubel.
Dr. Donald Stern with us this morning, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. So, Dr. Stern, with phase one going into effect today and businesses starting, in a lot of cases, starting to slowly reopen, I guess, do we need to watch out for outbreaks now?
Well, the short and easy answer is yes. You can imagine, Ted, as businesses reopen, there's a greater opportunity because more and more people are coming together. There's then a greater opportunity for transmission of this disease from person to person. As well as, for example, I was in a store this week purchasing an item, inserted my credit card into the credit card machine, and then there was a requirement for me to pick up that pen and sign my name. Well, frankly, I kind of thought about that. Okay, I picked up the pen, I signed my name on the credit card machine, and then I asked the clerk for some hand sanitizer because I don't know how many people have just touched that pen in the store prior to my arrival. Well, he didn't have any hand sanitizer. So I finished my purchase. I went back to my car. I have hand sanitizer in the car, and I put hand sanitizer on my hands. Because you can imagine if somebody with COVID-19 who wipes their nose, then picks up that pen and signs their name, now that virus is on that pen. And if they're not wiping it off frequently, the next 10, 20 people who pick up that pen are going to pick up virus off that pen. And some of them may very well get the disease. It's that simple. You know, it just apply reasonable practicality, understanding how this disease is transmitted from person to person through respiratory droplets in close proximity or off of contact surfaces. Yes, we're going to see more outbreaks, I think, as businesses open. But is this going to overwhelm our healthcare system? That's why we have to track the number of cases, track our hospitalizations, track the ventilator use, so on and so forth, just so that we don't overwhelm our healthcare system. People are still going to get ill. We're still going to have people hospitalized. We're still going to see a few deaths from this. But hopefully we can continue to slow it down and box this virus in ultimately.
And your pen story, 3 months ago, I would have never even considered that. But the fact that you were aware of that and went out to your car, you had some hand sanitizer in the car. So you had something there. You were able to take care of it. It's that kind of thing. I guess we all need to have that mindset when we go out to be alert to those kind of situations.
Sure.
So interesting. It's interesting how this has all changed, and really how we're all learning, and hopefully we are picking up some tips, and we are whether it's dealing with COVID-19 or just on into the future, that we're taking better care of ourselves and in aware of how things are transmitted.
Right, Ted. And so when we go into a business place, it's not necessarily the group of people that are a problem. Groups of people aren't a problem. The problem is that with larger groups of people, it's more likely that somebody in that group may have COVID-19. And when you congregate and have larger groups of people, not only do you then have a greater likelihood that somebody in that group may have the virus, but then you also present the opportunity for more people to contract the disease from that individual. So if you come across a group of people, I don't say necessarily avoid them, but don't linger, don't loiter, say good morning, continue to wear your mask, and move on. So you can walk through the store and be just fine. Understand how this disease is transmitted and keep your distance, social distancing, wear your mask, wash your hands frequently or use hand sanitizer, and we can slow the spread of this virus.
And I guess the other point is when as people start to come back to the office, Karen, you use your own pen. Don't grab a pen off of someone's desk to write something and set it back down. Just a lot of just plan ahead and think about these things.
Exactly, that's a great idea. When I go in, I'm having physical therapy right now. I had rotator cuff repair a few weeks ago, just before I went back to work. And when I go into physical therapy office, you're supposed to sign in.
Yeah.
Well, I bring my own pen. I don't pick up their pen. I use my own pen and sign in.
That's a great idea. I'm going to adopt that from our talk today. Hey, you've talked a couple of times, Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director of the Rappahannock Area Health District, here with us this morning on News Talk 1230 WFVA. You've talked about boxing in, and I know that's a health term that you have used as we have talked week in and week out. Talk a little bit about what's involved with that.
Sure. When we talk about boxing in the virus, it's really talking about public health 101, how we reduce the spread and remove an infectious disease from the community. It's our goal that we would actually eliminate this virus from the community. Now, again, I've said this is endemic. I'm not convinced that we're going to be able to do that. But our efforts are directed towards that. So that means identify the case, and that's the value of testing. But so what? You identify a case, so what? Then that individual knows if they have the COVID-19 virus, that they can then isolate themselves. There's been plenty of education about what that means in terms of preventing contact with others in the home, not going to work, so on and so forth. So. And we would also, with any positive laboratory, again, interview that individual and provide instructions and guidance about isolation. Secondly, in boxing it in, it's interviewing that individual to find out who their contacts are. That is, who are those individuals who are most at risk for contracting this disease from that person? We then interview or have a conversation with those high-risk for transmission individuals and instruct them about the value of quarantine. So case identification, case interview, case contact tracing and interview, isolation and quarantine. And you continue till we box this thing in. A good example of this and how effective it is remember Ebola?
Mm-hmm.
And remember how widespread it suddenly exploded in some Western African countries. Well, that's because they didn't really bother with a strategic public health approach to that virus. People still kind of lived their lives. Someone would die from this, and there would be people surrounding the dead individual, picking that virus up off the body. Ebola can be transmitted much, much more readily than COVID-19. It was much more of a severe disease. But what happened in Nigeria, this was a good example of how effective boxing it in can be. They were very aggressive. When they identified their first few cases, they rounded, and some people say they were overly aggressive in Nigeria. They would round those people up and take them to an isolation center and then identify their contacts and pick up those contacts and bring them to the isolation center. Now, they provided care, medical treatment, and care for those individuals, but they took a very serious strategy in isolating those folks from the rest of the community. And guess what? They had, what, a dozen deaths from Ebola in Nigeria? It was a remarkable strategy. Yes, there was application of state's police power in order to make sure that those folks who had the disease were isolated. And it was thought to be somewhat heavy-handed. My staff aren't heavy-handed, okay? I think they've been very gentle and very kind with folks to instruct them on the value of isolation and then to identify their contacts and have their contacts quarantined. So the key is how people respond, and you, the community, can prevent the spread of this disease if you practice those. We can box this thing in if you isolate yourself and quarantine yourself following these guidelines.
And first and foremost, we talk about this every week. If you don't feel well, stay home. Don't go to work.
Well, that's a simple rule, number one, right there. I mean, we've been saying that for decades around flu. If you're sick, stay home.
Yeah.
Right.
In talking about the contact tracing and what your staff, and we've talked about this before, about how your small staff has been just overwhelmed in trying to keep up and to continue to do this. I saw this week that the state health department is looking to hire some people, and I'm assuming that some of those will end up in this health district to help and augment what your staff is doing.
Ted, you know, my staff have done a remarkable job, and in 2 months, we've gone from 4 members of our case investigation and contact tracing team to about 30 staff now who are doing that work. Well, you can imagine what this does to our underlying core public health services. We've streamlined to an extreme degree. We are still providing maternity care. We are still providing family planning services. We're still providing sexually transmitted disease testing, counseling, and treatment. We're still tracking those occasional TB cases and their contacts. But this is very difficult for a limited number of staff as we've streamlined that. Now, we've done some, I think, very, clever or helpful things in these regards. For example, Mary Washington Hospital offered to help us out, and we worked out a plan over during the early parts of the pandemic to move our high-risk maternity patients into their maternal and fetal medicine program. We've had that cooperative relationship all along, but these patients have been co-managed by both maternal-fetal medicine and our health department staff. But what we've decided is that once a patient is identified as a high-risk maternity patient, they will continue to follow them until after delivery. And that reduced our clinic workload by about 25%. Other things that we've done is hiring a contract staff. And now that the state has provided this pool of contractors who are being hired through COVID-19 federal dollars, we will now start hiring more contractors to do the case investigation and contact tracing as we allow our staff to go back to their other job.
Yeah.
And again, get back into expanding and addressing those core public health services for our residents and our community.
There was the story yesterday about an outbreak in an agricultural setting with nine people. We've just had the one nursing home in King George. That work that you did over the last little bit of really educating and working with the nursing homes and in jails and with the homeless, that all seems to have paid off. We don't seem to have the numbers that some other parts of the state have had with those cases.
Well, Ted, I'll accept some of those accolades, but I will tell you the accolades for example, this nursing home you make reference to, they should be congratulated for their efforts to prevent spread of disease in their facility. When they had their first case, they implemented a substantial number of infection control measures in their facility, facility-wide, to make sure that disease isn't being spread amongst their employees and amongst their residents. And then they agreed to let us work with them to bring in the National Guard and test everybody in the facility. And we found very few more with disease. Those folks were then one resident and a few more employees were isolated, so we're boxing in this virus. We've identified disease, we've isolated those individuals, making sure the contacts are also quarantined. So it's that kind of action that's helpful. It's not just what we do, but it's what the businesses do, it's what the private sector does, it's what individuals do, understanding reasonable practicality and how to prevent the spread of this disease. Businesses who don't pay much attention to it, who allow employees to come in even though they're sick, who don't provide hand sanitizer, who don't provide for social distancing in their workplaces, those are the ones that are going to get into trouble. They're going to have an outbreak. There we go.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District here this morning. We will wrap this up when we come back on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Dr. Donald Stern here, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District, as we conclude this morning. So Dr. Stern, one of the things that I have had asked of me is in a situation when if I live with someone who's commuting, say to Northern Virginia, when they return at night, is it a good idea to have them change their clothes before they come into the house and bring any possible germs with them?
Well, I wouldn't limit that, Ted, specifically to Northern Virginia. We talk about Northern Virginia, but you know the reason why we talk about them so much because it's a dense population. It's the epicenter now in our part of the state. For this disease, and that's simply because there's such a high number and high density of people and the opportunity for this virus to transmit from person to person. Therefore, there's a higher incidence of disease there. But think about it. Whether you go to Northern Virginia or you go downtown Fredericksburg or whatever, and especially if you have somebody in the household who has an underlying medical condition, is on cancer chemotherapy, is elderly, I would encourage people to exercise more caution. So you come to the house, you take off your shoes before you go into the house, you come in, you wash your hands, and many folks would change their clothes. I don't think that's unreasonable, especially if you're around folks who may be COVID-19 positive. And the fact is still, we don't know who that is because so much of this disease is asymptomatic or mild in nature. I have a nurse friend who works in a hospital, but not in that section of the hospital where they're taking care of COVID-19 patients. But her husband is over 60, and so she comes home. She takes off her shoes before she enters the house. She comes in. She changes, showers, clearly washes her hands. So these are simple things we could do in order to stop this virus and keep it from spreading from person to person.
One of the things that I'm going to take with me that we talked about today is always be carrying my own pen and not have to, because I have gotten into situations where a pen is given to you and you just don't know.
Carry your own pen and your own hand sanitizer.
Yeah, no. Several weeks ago, you got me to put hand sanitizer in my car. Slowly but surely, you're teaching me some of these things that really a lot of us haven't taken for granted. But like you said, and we started the show talking about this has gone from pandemic to endemic.
Yes, sir.
And it's gonna be around, and that's and we're gonna be living with it. And I guess as things start to open up, it's good to remember and you know, have the mask, use the mask, the social distancing, the washing of hands, everything we've been taught over the last few months. Just don't let down on any of them.
Again, practice what I call reasonable practicality. Understanding how this disease is transmitted, and you can help control the spread of this disease in our community.
And I guess a lot of when we talk about when the numbers come out every day, and you look at the numbers, the hospitalization numbers is really the one to keep track of it in this community, to see where we're at. And right now we're almost at 30. You'd like to see that go down.
Well, certainly not rise. And as we open up, I wouldn't be surprised if it kind of stays at this level. But if it increases, I can tell you that I'm sure the governor and the state health commissioner are going to be more cautious about entering into phase two. So if everybody could participate in this, continue to social distance at all times, wear their mask, wash their hands. We can't overemphasize this enough, and I know we keep saying this over and over again, Ted, in our Friday meetings, but it's important, and we can all play a part in keeping each other safe in these regards. You can still be safe. You're safest at home. And again, I remind particularly the elderly and those with the underlying medical conditions, stay home. Mm-hmm. Let others do the shopping. Let others do those errands for you. And at the health department, as we said early on, we can prevent the spread of this disease. Many would say that this is all overreaction, but I'll assure you, if these measures had not been put into place, we would have seen much more disease, many more hospitalizations, possibly overwhelming our hospital. And because these extreme measures have been put in place to prevent the spread of disease, we have a healthy community today, and we can look forward to the future.
Dr. Donald Stern, the acting director with the Rappahannock Area Health District. Dr. Stern, thank you to you and your staff for just great work, and again, great to talk to you this morning, and we'll stay in touch. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
That is it for Town
Thanks
Talk.
For listening
we'll see
to
you Monday.
Town Talk on News Talk 1230 WFVA. Brought to you by Deakin Wealth Management in Fredericksburg, the financial firm that specializes in providing comprehensive advice for your serious money. The views expressed by the host and guests on this program are their own and not necessarily those of this station, its management, or Centennial Broadcasting. The Glenn Beck Program is next on News Talk 1230 WFVA.